You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
CFL fans, welcome to episode 128 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you in part by AngusReed64.com. Visit AngusReed64.com if you're looking for a speaker for your next event and see what former BC Lions player Angus Reed can do for you. Make sure to check out his new book, Thank You Coach, as well on Amazon.ca and Amazon.com for anyone listening in the United States. I'm your host, Brian Walrishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show, which is, of course, a member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. We are back for our last show of 2018, and we have a lot to talk about, from Grey Cup to free agency, and oh yes, the BC Lions have named their new head coach. To no one's surprise, former Calgary Stampeder defensive coordinator Devon Claybrooks has been named the 26th head coach of the BC Lions as the Wally Buono era officially comes to an end. Coach Claybrooks has made it clear he's not here to fill Wally's shoes, but to walk in his own. And he promises this Lions team is going to play an aggressive brand of football under his guidance. He's been a busy man since the announcement, but tonight we get the chance to speak with the new coach. We're really looking forward to it. But first, let's get caught up on some other things going around the league and bring in Mojo Kemp. Mojo, it's been a while since we talked, before Grey Cup, in fact. How are things, my friend?
Hey, Brian. Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading the last show of 2018. Brian, things are great for me. I'm back at work, off of light duties, back to full-time work, and getting on, man. Looking forward to, already looking forward to next season, and looking forward to the holidays, man. Life in Moj world, Brian, is awesome.
Excellent. And it's, of course, the Christmas season. We've got a little plate of goodies here that Susie made up for us. And we'll see how many we can get through during the course of this show here, but hopefully not too many, because I won't be feeling very good in the morning. I've been eating way too much of that stuff, and I really don't need to be eating it, to tell you the truth. But it looks good, and I'm sure we'll snack on a couple of those tonight. Since we last talked, of course, I've been to Grey Cup, and it was a great Grey Cup festival in Edmonton, all in one location. You know, all the parties were in one spot, so, and the festival was right out the doors of the convention center there, so that was really good. And the only downside for me was the Spirit of Edmonton was a bit of a letdown, because their room simply wasn't big enough to handle the crowds. Usually on a Thursday night, you go to the Spirit of Edmonton, you get in no problem. We got there around 7 o'clock. We had to sit in a holding room for about an hour or so, and Dan from the CFL Horseman talked to a security guard and got us to in a little quicker. So, but that was the only night we went. So, you know, $10 cover, you don't want to go sit in the holding room. You want to be in the main party, right? So that was a little bit disappointing. But other than that, it was an outstanding festival and a really good job by the city of Edmonton and all the volunteers there, for sure. What'd you think of the Grey Cup game, Mojo? Stampeders finally get it done. My only beef with that game was it wasn't as good as it could have been, because the field was pretty much a skating rink.
Yeah, that's surprising that they didn't have better take better care of the field, man. But, you know, you can't have every game at BC Place. For one thing, my budget couldn't take it. Imagine having Grey Cup every year. But, you know, you're going to play outside. That's what you're going to get every now and again. You're going to get those bad weather games. And, you know, both teams had to play on it and deal with it. Yeah. Deal with it. And that's the way it goes. What are you going to do, man?
I get that both teams have to deal with it. But this is your championship game. And you want to put on, you know, the best show that you can for people watching from all over the world, not just Canada. And, you know, that's a pretty brand new field turf field in Edmonton there. They used to have the grass where they used to be accused of actually watering the field down to make it an ice rink back in the old days. But they've got a state-of-the-art field there. And I there's got to be a way to de-thaw that field in time for the big game. I don't think, you know, you'd ever see that in the NFL. They don't have cold weather Super Bowls very often. But, you know, I thought it was unfortunate because guys were slipping around. And not only that, it's pretty dangerous for the players, too. You remember that Deontay Spencer punt return where he caught the ball and his feet just came out from under them and he limped off the field there. So, you know, I think it's a little bit dangerous for the players, and I think it robs the fans of the best game we could see. And I know a bunch of people are going to tweet at me after this saying football was meant to be played in the elements, but this isn't the 1920s anymore, and I think technology's advanced a little more. I'd like to see the best product on the field possible in the highlight game of the year.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. You'd think that there'd be something under the grass or under the field that would warm it up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe they'll look at that in the future. I'm sure there is some kind of heat tracing or something they could put under there. But anyway, Lions Den Party was pretty good at Grey Cup as well. It was a small room, but well attended. There was a really good band there. And I talked to Rick LaLacheur, the president of the BC Lions, when I was in Edmonton at the Lions Den, and I mentioned to him, it's too bad the room's so small. And he said, well, we're going to start building this right. And, you know, we're going to start small, and next year it'll be a little bigger, and year it'll be a little bigger.
The last one they had here in BC, they had a giant room for mm-hmm. the Lions Den, and there was nobody there.
Well, in 2005, I think it was, or 14, I can't remember. No, 2011, they had that big room with the Budweiser truck and everything in the convention center, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then they tried to do that again the following year in Toronto, and it was just cavernous in there.
Yeah,
and there was nobody there.
And then
in 2014
there,
but, again, they ran into the same problem. You know. But it was a big improvement over last year where it was in Ottawa, which is in a bar that was shut down for a year. The plumbing was in disrepair. There was I don't even want to get into what was in the washrooms, but it was a much better effort by the Lions this year, and everybody had a good time there. One of the other really great parties was the Atlantic Schooners. We were there for the name unveiling. It was a really big room with lots of tables. You could sit down and take a load off your feet, and anybody that's been to Grey Cup knows that you need to do that from time to time. But yeah, we were there for the unveiling of the name. No surprises. It will be the Atlantic Schooners. Of course, they don't officially have a team yet, but they officially have a name now, and that seemed to be the popular choice among the people there.
Well, good for those guys. You know, we need another team. Man, imagine a Grey Cup game out in Halifax. You want to talk about a game in the elements.
Yeah, it gets pretty windy there. I'm sure the Kickers will have a lot of fun when they play in Atlantic Canada. Kudos to the 2-0 Live show, another member of our Canadian Football Podcast Network. They did a live show in Edmonton to raise money for CFL Fans Fight Cancer. Travis Carraw beat Zach Evans of the Riders in a pierogi eating contest. It was close, but Travis pulled it out. Later on, he was crushed by Zach Evans in a shotgun contest at the Grey Cup tweet up. But good on Travis and Brazilian Ty. They did a really good job with that. And Ryan from the Horsemen and Janine from the Red Blacks Mouchoir podcast was there talking about the game, and it was a really good event, and they raised over $400 for CFL Fans Fight Cancer in that, and hopefully that's going to be something that we can keep doing in future Grey Cups as well, more shows from the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Yeah, well, you know, kudos to everybody at CFL Fans Fight Cancer. As folks know, this has now become a very near and dear event to me. So way to go, everybody.
And as for the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event itself, big kudos to Randy Newman for all his efforts in putting that together. Randy kind of took charge this year. He lives in Hamilton, but and we didn't really have a representative in Edmonton, so Randy kind of took this on a little late in the game and put on a great event in Edmonton. We raised over $5,000, $5,316 to be exact, raised for Wellspring Edmonton. 100% of that goes to those guys, and they were very grateful and very impressed with that total, and always a great event, and it's well supported by CFL fans. Our new coach, Devon Claybrooks, actually stopped by with Nick Lewis, and Javon Johnson won the 50-50. It was a pretty good event, and it keeps getting better every year. So kudos to Randy for that, and we'll look forward to next year's event in Calgary. Of course, the Canadian Football Podcast Network trading cards were a big success, and kudos to the Empire crew for putting those together. Mojo, you just got yours tonight. What'd you think of the cards?
Man, they were awesome. What a great job those guys have done. I think they've really opened up Pandora's box here, Brian. And like we were talking about before we went on, I'm glad the Grey Cup's not going to be here for a little while. Yeah,
that's a lot of work they put into those cards. And it was a very popular little novelty that fans were actually asking for, even asking for some autographs from podcasters here and there. So it was pretty fun. And, fans are still asking if anybody has extras to complete their sets. So we do have a few extras, extra packs kicking around. I can't guarantee you what cards you will get. But if you want one, just send me a DM on Twitter and I'll try and get you a pack or two to send out. CFL Twitter Awards. Thanks to all of you who voted for us. 100 pairs of socks are being donated to Covenant House in Vancouver this week, courtesy of Mr. Nice Socks. And tremendous honor to be voted Twitter's favorite CFL podcast. We talked about this before, Mojo. It's not a competition. We really value our relationships with the CF Pod Network.
No. That's off the table now. That's off the table. We won, man. So all that other feel-good stuff, no. We won. We're the best. Good job, you and me. In all serious, folks, thanks so much for voting for us. Not once, but Brian, we had to win 3 different times.
Yeah.
To get to this. So you guys have been amazing every year, especially this year. And like, in all seriousness, you know, it's not a competition. What a great little community that we've got here now with all these great listeners, all these great shows. Anybody could have won this award and would have been as deserving as anybody else. So great job to the entire community out there.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a lot to chat about with the Lions, and we may as well start with the biggest news, which is, of course, the hiring of Devon Claybrooks as the head coach. Mojo, what are your thoughts on the hire, which really should have come as no surprise to anyone who's been listening to this podcast, because we've been projecting that he was going to be the next coach for a few months now.
I thought it was, a great hire, perfect for what everybody wants, to get interest back into the BC Lions. Let's hope Coach can live up to the hype, as it were. But you know, Brian, I can't believe the haters out there, man. Or should I say hatters? Who cares the way a man wears his hat? Get us the Grey Cup, and you can wear your hat however you want, Coach.
Yeah, and hey, Bill Belichick isn't the best-dressed man on the sidelines either, and he wins a lot of Super Bowls, and that's all fans should really care about. I think we both love us some defense, Mojo, so I'm thrilled that we have a coach who's been in charge of the league's best defense for the last 3 years running now. But he also seems to have an infectious energy about him as well, and I really get the feeling the Lions are going to have some swagger this year.
I don't know a whole lot about him, and I look forward to getting to know him, but any man that can take a picture and put it up on Twitter with his mom is all right with me. And it's good to bring mom into the Lions' den as well. But I have a feeling that for all his looks of jolliness. This is a dude that you don't want to get on the wrong side of.
No, no, exactly. He's all business. And when the Lions training camp starts, it is going to be all business with Devon Claybrooks. And I think he's going to demand the best out of his players. Not that Wally Buono didn't. I think he just approaches it differently. I think he's a younger coach. He's going to relate to the players well. So, you know, that's going to be a big plus. A couple things that stood out for me during his press conference. One, he expects his team to contend almost immediately. And two, he's not coming in here to fill Wally's shoes. In fact, his quote was, he's going to walk in his own shoes. And I think that's important, not only for the team, but for the fan base who by all accounts are excited about this hire. And, you know, I think that a fresh start is needed here. And I think Devon Claybrooks is going to provide that.
Definitely. And we knew that was going to happen. And, you know, no surprise to see all the coaches let go. I mean, sad to see guys losing their jobs, but that's the nature of coaching in professional sports. You're hired to be fired, but nobody likes to see it. I just thought maybe a couple of those guys could have stuck around. I thought maybe Reinbolt was going to make the cut, but sorry to see them guys go. But, you know, interested to see what Nick Lewis kind of surprised me being named as a coach.
Yeah, that's not official yet. Ryan Phillips as well. Dave Naylor reports on TSN today that it is a done deal that Rich Stubler is going to be the defensive coordinator. And I've seen some people griping about that. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Wasn't Rich Stubler the defensive coordinator when we couldn't stop Kerry Joseph drawing up the middle in the playoff games?
I can't remember, but Rich Stubler has been around for a long time. I was going to get into this later, but we'll touch on it a bit more later. But Rich Stubler is one of the guys that Devon Claybrooks learned from. And this is still going to be, let's make no mistake here, this is still going to be Devon Claybrooks' defense. But he now is a head coach. He's got a lot more responsibility than just calling defensive plays. So he's got a guy that he can trust who knows what kind of defense he wants to run. And I'm sure this is going to be Devon Claybrooks' defense put into the hands of Rich Stubler during the course of games and to help come up with schemes and stuff. But I'm not too worried about it. I think it's going to be a good hire. You know, Devon's a first-time head coach. He's got to have some experienced guys around him. So I think that'll be fine. And as I said, I think he's going to have a great relationship with the players. He's a younger, former player, has accomplished a lot in his career. He's won both a Super Bowl and a Grey Cup. Players respect that lineage, and by all accounts, this, you know, his players in Calgary would go through the wall for this guy. It's going to be a lot different in that locker room than it was with an understated Wally Buono running the show.
Yeah, I can't imagine how much different this is going to be, the Coach Claybrooks to Coach Buono. But, you know, and we all know, Brian, we needed it. We needed a complete change. We needed firing up. And I'm, you know, this is as excited as I've been for an off season and the start of the next season in a long time.
Let's hear from the man himself now and welcome the 26th head coach of the BC Lions, Devon Claybrooks, to the show. Coach, thank you for making the time to us and welcome to BC.
Thanks for having me. I'm enjoying every bit of it.
Even the rain?
Yeah, I mean, I would rather have a light rain jacket than a parka any day.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, you've had some time to let things sink in now. I'm guessing you can't wait to get started on the football side of things, but how does it feel to be in charge of your own program now?
It's great. I mean, I can't complain at all. Like, you know, Mr. Braley and Ed and Rick did a good job of, you know, setting it up to where it's in place and things like that, and I'm just very grateful and thankful they entrusted me to be the 26th head coach of the BC Lions.
Let's get to know you on a little bit more personal level now. You're from Martinsville, Virginia, raised by your mom, Sally, and your grandparents. It sounds like you were into car racing when you were younger. When did you start playing football, and did you play any other sports as well?
Well, I played a lot of sports. I think one thing that my parents did, that they wanted us to experience everything. So, like, we played basketball, ran track. I did play baseball until I was, like, 10 or 11, and I got hit in the head with a baseball. So I guess it's where I think I still might have the swelling. That's why my head's so big. But after that, I didn't want to do that anymore, and I called that quits. But I did a lot of the other sports, football and track and basketball. So I was fortunate and blessed. Then went to East Carolina. Had a good career there. Had a great mentor there, and Steve Logan did a great job of, you know, trying to turn me into a not a knucklehead kid into like a semi-mature young man, and see how that panned out. And then was fortunate to play some multiple years in the NFL and so on and so forth.
So where did your love for car racing come from? I guess your grandfather was involved with it?
Yeah, we're really country where we grew up. Like, I mean, it's probably, I think we got like 5 stoplights now, but we had like 2 growing up. So if you blink, you missed it. So the thing that we had that was the best part was we would always go to the NASCAR races and we like loved it. So it was like I was in the pit running around. If it ain't rubbing, it ain't racing. Martinsville is one of the small tracks, so it's a great experience. And I would recommend anybody who's a sport fan to go to one. Not that entertaining on television, but definitely that entertaining in person.
Hey, Coach, we've had Belton Johnson on the show in the past, and he talks about his great prowess with a barbecue. Do you own a barbecue restaurant back home?
Oh, I did. I got rid of that. But you can have him on all you want, and we can challenge him anytime. I'll put my recipes against anybody. To tell you that, you don't get to be this thickness over here and can't cook.
So if we were coming over to your place for dinner, what would be on the grill?
I'll probably give you a heart attack on the plate, some baked beans, some macaroni and cheese, some collard greens, some ribs, some fried chicken. You know, just to name a few. That's just a little sampler size. Might make a nice little queso dip to keep it versatile in the beginning. You know, keep your line on your toes and clean your palate and keep it healthy.
Well, next time we have Belton on, we'll throw down that challenge for you.
Coach, you're one of the few guys that can flash a Super Bowl ring and a Grey Cup ring. Now, refresh my memory. Your Super Bowl ring is from Tampa Bay?
Yeah, 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. With Gruden and that defense, the defensive line and the defensive setup is something that I've been running since I've been in this league. And we've been able to have great success running a system very similar to what we ran in Tampa as far as the sacks and as far as always being in the upper echelon of the league with sacks when they come out. So that system has been very fruitful to me, and it has very grown our game.
What do you prefer, the 3-down football or 4-down?
I honestly speaking, it's kind of funny because, you know, as being a player on both sides and things like that, you always get those questions. And I would say, and I'm not saying this because I'm the head coach, because I don't really sugarcoat anything. I kind of keep it real. I would say it's 3-down because, and I'll explain myself. One, the game is more prevalent because special teams play a bigger part. Down south is 1 every 4 downs. Here's 1 every 3. So it's 33% of the game. So, therefore, it's more important there. And I also like the blue-collar aspect of it where you can see Bo Levi Mitchell, Mike Riley, Andrew Harris. You can see them at a bar or a restaurant. You can sit and talk to them, have food, and blah, blah. The stars are more approachable. There are more blue-collar stars in this league and not like down south in the NFL where you see Peyton Manning or you see Tom Brady and you're really going to see 5 security guards. They're not going to really be that friendly in that aspect. And that type of thing. So I think by it being more approachable, it's more grassroots and more hands-on here in the CFL. And that's why I like it. It hasn't really expounded upon that corporate and just trying to juggernaut of just trying to generate dollars. It's really still a gate-driven league, and you want to put butts in the seat.
Well, that's why we love the league as well. You've risen through the coaching ranks rather quickly after retiring from football in 2012. You've spoken about the confidence that John Huffnagel and Dave Dickinson showed in you, but you've had some other great mentors as well. You mentioned John Gruden. Who are the guys that you've played for in your different levels of football that you've taken traits from to form your own coaching identity?
Well, I would have to say the number one guy was definitely my high school coach. He actually saw something in me. He was a basketball coach and a track coach, hence the point of why I did all three, because he really was not giving you any downtime, because he really believed in idle hands make idle minds and that type of thing and try to keep teenagers out of trouble. So he made us do everything like that. But then Coach Logan, as I mentioned before, my college coach, was very instrumental in letting me know like how to understand and learn the game. And you should learn it from front to back. As a D-lineman, you should really want to know what the secondary and the linebackers are doing, not only your job, because it lets you know when you can take chances. And as I got up to the pro ranks, I mean, had Dungy, Gruden, Bill Parcells. I take a lot of Bill Parcells' sayings, Parcells-isms, and things like that, and I use them. I use them on a daily basis, so to speak. And it's so funny because when I was thinking about getting into coaching, and I wanted to get something to get my feet wet. And I was with Dallas, and he's like, "Son, I don't know why you want to do this. Coaches just build your house is built on sand. It's only a matter of time before it topples over." And I'm like, "Nah, coach, I'm going to put mine on stilts, so I'll be okay." And then, you know, he gets that one, and I use another one. The name will change on the back of their jersey for Will My Door. He uses that one, too. So I would say you try to take a little bit from them. I mean, like, Gruden had filled up the swear jar every 5 minutes. Dungy was like your dad. He never really cursed, never really raised his voice. He tried to talk to you like a grown man. Bill Parcells was his way of the highway, non-negotiable. And Dennis Green, they are who they thought they were, but we let them off the hook. So so you get a good mixture of those guys. And then not to mention Huff, and understand his structure and the way he likes to understand his players and make sure his players have what they need. Not what they want, but what they need to be successful and that type of thing. And just one thing, the common thing of all those coaches that are successful, even with different ways they've done it, they've always been straight shooters. They've always like kept it real with the players. And that's one thing that I wanted when I got into this. I said, I'm going to make sure I be completely honest with my players. They might not like it, but they'll respect me and they'll respect what I'm saying because I'm being honest with them. So when you're able to do that and you give it to them, black and white, not gray, not it could be this or could be that, and if you can control that situation, then you understand it, then you're able to put them in position and they'll be able to be successful.
Do you have a good John Gruden story you can share with us?
I don't know if I could. It's a lot of beep, beep, beep I'd be putting in there. But I'll tell you a funny story. When Gruden got we lose to, I think, the Rams or something on that night. We got upset, so they had got rid of Dungy. So One Bug Place used to be where the airport is, so they had the Colts jet with the big horseshoe on it sitting right there in front of us where our players' parking lot. So we see the jet when we pull up, the private jet of the owner, and we go in, and the craziest part is Dungy's like, you know, "Thank you, man, for fighting for me. I appreciate the effort. For you, I'm going to take my song and dance to Cleveland. I mean, not Cleveland, but the Colts, because it's a new – it's the Glaciers want to go, and I want to appreciate them." And he was the most genuine guy that ever gets fired. You know, like, behind closed doors, you're like, he's probably, like, going crazy. But, no, he was cool and calm and collective. So when Gruden comes in, and our defense was already pretty good, if I would say so myself, at that point in time. And I'll never forget it. It reminded me of, like, Remember the Titans when the two kids was like, "The defense is set, and all you need to do is worry about the offense. We got this," like that. So Savin Brooks really told Gruden, like, "You just need to give us 20 points. If you give us 20 points, we'll win the Super Bowl." And it was so funny because that's what really happened. Like, we just needed to get points. And in the Super Bowl, the craziest story about Gruden is he ran our scout team during Super Bowl week. And he said there are five – it's a one play that Gannon will check to at any given time, and we got to be able to counteract it and stop it. So it was the comeback by one receiver, a post by the other receiver, and then a drag route by the tight end. All five of our turnovers came off that play. Wow. When he would check to it, we was jumping everything. All five of our turnovers, you remember correctly, the two comebacks Dwight Smith picked off and the two post routes Dexter Jackson picked off, and Brooks picked off the tight end drag route.
Awesome.
Hey, Coach, your name's been out there on the radar for better part of a year now, maybe even longer. Why is the time right now to take on the BC head coaching job, and what did you like about the opportunity presented here in BC?
It's about fit, and I say this. I said it in a press conference. I said it in a few interviews. When you're surrounded by great football people, that their only objective is to win. And I've been fortunate to be there with Huff and Dave, and been on some teams, you know, in Tampa and teams in Dallas and things like that, where winning takes over priority. And there's the one thing I love about it is a lot of times in professional sports, you get so – it's such an ego-driven league, and pro sports is just so ego-driven. But the only ego that I saw in this situation and circumstances was winning. and that was the sole focus. It wasn't if you recommended a player to me, I recommended a player, whoever, it doesn't matter. We're going to play the best players that gives us the best chance to win. It doesn't really matter of the egos for this and that. And by Ed being a former player, he can still relate to the players, and he's a great man because he's fair and he's honest. And in this business, when everybody tries to appease everybody and play politicians, show to one side of the fence and the other, and so on and so forth, you get so much so lost all the time that it's tough to come by. And then it's a great city, great ownership. Mr. Brady does a great job, and then Rick is doing a great job as a president. And the best part is from the top all the way down to myself, whether it's Mr. Brady, Rick, Ed, myself, we all understand and we all want to put a winning product on the field and put butts in the seats. And that's our common goal. And we understand that it starts from the top with the same message and it trickles down from myself to the staff, to the support staff, even the sales and marketing and all that have to be really to pull in the same direction. And if we're able to do that, we should be able to put a good product on the field.
You're coming from a very successful organization, and you've said that BC will stay BC and won't become Calgary West. How do you have to adjust your thinking or the way you're doing things going from a coordinator to a head coach?
Well, when you're a coordinator, you're concerned about one phase of the team. And when you're the head coach, you're concerned about every phase, and you have to take that into consideration in your decisions. And again, your decisions are focused solely on winning and not ego-driven, not attitude-driven, and you think with a calm, cool demeanor, I think you should be fine. And coming from a successful program as Calgary, I've seen the way Dave does things is totally different than Huff. Dave didn't go in and try to become Huff. He put his own imprint on it, and that's Dave Dickinson's team. Anybody that's in that building knows it's Dave's team. Even though Huff is still there, and he leans on Huff for counsel, and Huff does a great job with the scouting department and bringing in players, but it's Dave Dickinson's coach team. And the best part is with those two quarterbacks, two offensive gurus, two heads that are bigger than mine, so to speak, and relative with offensive football, to be able to coexist and still win games without the egos getting involved just shows you that it can be done. And that it just shows you that it could be done in that way with two powerful personalities that understand. But at the end of the day, nothing overtakes precedent of winning.
Devon, you're a defensive guy, but as you said, you're now in a position of overseeing all phases of this football team. As a head coach, what do you feel you can bring to the offensive side of the ball working with offensive coordinator Jarius Jackson?
Well, you know, when you're a defensive coordinator, you know what gave you problems. You know what gives other teams problems because you still scout their defense and you break down their offense because they're trying to attack you. Yeah. So you really, like, you might not know the offensive verbiage or the offensive this, but I can go in and say, Jarius, I need to put a route here, set this down and do this and so on and so forth. That would work and that caused me problems. Or as I'm studying film on other players to even scout other players in the league, you look at other defenses and you look at offensive players and you know what gave them problems because you do self-scouts and you scout the whole league. And when you scout the whole league, you're not just scouting as a defensive coach. You're still looking at the offensive weapons of what they're doing. And we can get your wife to get on the film and she can tell me who's the best player on the team because she's going to pop on film. She can be like, I don't know what 28's doing, but 28's always, I see his number all the time. So, I mean, it's not an exact science to the system, because if it was an exact science, everybody would go undefeated, right?
Yeah. I think you were quoted last week as saying your coaching staff is about 80% completed. I know you can't mention names at this point, but are you getting closer to finalizing that at all?
You probably get a surprise in the morning or tomorrow afternoon, I think. And, well, you know, by the time this airs, I don't know when it airs. But, yeah, we've got it pretty much sewed up. We're able to get the guy that we wanted. Wanted to get a young, energetic staff mixed with the youth and experience in there. I think we got a good group. The guys that can relate to players, and especially this day and age with the players, these millennials, you know, they're a different type of animal themselves. So you got to make sure that you got guys that can relate and understand that how the standard of what we're trying to get accomplished in the culture that we're trying to bring is a player-friendly staff, but a hard-working and firm staff on what we believe and what we stand for.
So can we expect that the whole staff will be named tomorrow, or just one or two guys, or what's what do you think?
Yeah, I think you should expect the whole staff should be named tomorrow.
Good stuff.
Hey, Coach, there's a lot of discussion over the new football operations cap that's coming into effect this year. How do you, as a coach, look at that new reality? And do you think it's going to hurt getting coaches and other ops staff to come to the CFL?
If you want to coach, you're going to find a way to coach. And it shouldn't, you got to put your time in before you try to make the money anyway. I think that it's a great job by the CFL to limit the budgets, and so to speak, so because they don't want to get outrageous. And you get a few teams that spend loosely, and you don't want to let that snowball, and you don't want the league to become like baseball, where there's the have and have nots and that type of thing. So if you can get ahead of the curve and try to control it, then I think you'll be fine.
Well, Coach, Mojo and I are both lovers of great defense, and we can't wait to see what you're going to bring to this team. I also want to thank you for stopping by the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event in Edmonton. I know you stopped by with our mutual friend Brock Shepherd in Calgary, and I told him we'd look after you out here. But it was great for you to stop by there and spend a bit of time there. I know you were very busy that week.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm here for any events. I was telling the Sportsnet guys today, I was telling them, I was like, I might be single and – but I'm married to the BC Lions, and I got 120 kids with staff and players. So that's what I'm here for. And anything you need from me, you can always holler at me.
All right. We really appreciate it. One of the best interviews we've ever done. So thanks for taking the time for us tonight.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
You're welcome.
Well, Mojo, that was a great interview with Coach Claybrooks. I am super pumped about this hire. I really think players are going to love playing for Coach Claybrooks, and I can't wait to see how he and Ed Hervey start assembling this roster and what style they're going to play.
You know, I think he's the right man for the job, and I've said it before on the show. I'm saying it again. I'm excited to see what the new coach brings and how he's going to change the energy in the room and the culture in the locker room. I'm really pumped.
Real personable guy, too. Great to have him on, and we'll try and get him on in the future again. So let's continue with the Lions now. And other than the CBA getting worked out, the biggest issues right now are filling in the coaching staff. And as you heard from Devon Claybrooks, we can probably expect an announcement by the time you listen to this podcast, if you're up early in the morning. And of course, the Lions also have to deal with 34 free agents on their list. It's 33 today after a big signing. We'll talk about that in a second here. We didn't ask the coach for names regarding his coaching staff because he wouldn't have told us anyway, but what we do know is that Jarius Jackson will be back as offensive coordinator, Marcus Howell back as receivers coach. No other coaches will be returning, including special teams coach Jeff Reinbold and Randy Melvin as the defensive line coach.
Yeah, tough. Like I mentioned earlier, Brian, tough to see guys lose their jobs. I was really surprised by Reinbold. Now that you... I see Randy Melvin as well. A little surprised by that. You got to wonder how much the new salary, the new operations cap comes into play here, because none of those guys had contracts beyond February anyway.
Well, Ed Hervey said that the Lions wouldn't be affected by the operations cap. I think this was more of a case of a new coach coming in and just wanting to surround himself with guys that he was comfortable with. You know, two other guys have been let go as well. And of course, Mark Washington, defensive coordinator, that was kind of, you know, a given when you're bringing in a Devon Claybrooks. I'm sure he wants to run his own defense and have his own philosophies and stuff instilled in the organization. And of course, Dan D'Orazio, who's been a fixture here for a long time with the BC Lions. He did leave 1 year to coach in Saskatchewan, but you've heard guys like Angus Reid and others talk about Dan D'Orazio, and you know, they all say he's one of the best coaches they've ever had. So I'm not sure what's next for Dan, but we wish him the best as well. Both him and Washington put in some serious time here, and you kind of got a feel for Mark Washington a little bit. You know, he's really paid his dues, and I hope he gets a chance. I know he's being considered for some position in Montreal as well, so hopefully he gets a chance to run his own program one day.
I think, you know, Dan D'Orazio is going to land on his feet somewhere. Too good a coach to not end up somewhere. And same for Mark Washington. I just think Mark Washington's time here was at its end. I think his expiry date was here. And in order for him to move up, he's got to go somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think one thing that hurt him too was perception, right? Like, you don't want Wally to go away and then have one of Wally's staff.
Exactly. It's going
to ascend to the head coaching position. I don't think that would have gone over well with the fan base. But
no.
Unfortunately, it is what it is. And we wish those guys the best of luck and thank them for their service with the BC Lions. So there have been some other names mentioned in regards to the new staff. Rich Stubler is rumored to be in the running for the defensive coordinator position, and Dave Naylor of TSN tweeting that's a done deal today. Some fans are saying that's a retread, but there are valid reasons as to why that makes sense. We talked about it off the top of the show. Clay Brooks is a first-time head coach. He won't have the dual role of head coach and coordinator, and he partially learned the ropes from Stubler. So, you know, he's an experienced guy who will be able to scheme around the style that Clay Brooks wants to play.
Let's hope so, man. Let's hope so. I was still surprised by that hiring, Brian, knowing that the coach wanted to get younger, not only on the field, but like in the coaching staff. And I believe Mr. Stubler's getting up there a little bit. So that was a bit of a surprise. But as you say, now that you pointed out to me, he is coaches with a new coach, you're going to want some experienced guys around.
Well, and he did say it's a mix. What they're going to announce tomorrow is going to be a mixture of younger guys and older guys. Moving on to the offensive line, Dan Durazio's replacement is rumored to be perennial All-Star Brian Chu, who is rumored to be in line for the offensive line coaching job, and that's a fine replacement for Durazio as far as I'm concerned. Chu returns home to BC, and he should offer a wealth of experience to the job and will be respected by the players as a former player himself.
Lots of ex-players moving into the coaching ranks. Good to see that some of these guys can stick around and continue their career in football. I didn't know Brian Chu was a BC guy.
Yeah, we have Vancouver College graduate as well. Things get interesting from there. Ryan Phillips may be returning to the Den as the defensive backs coach, replacing the departed Stanley Franks. And it sounds like Nick Lewis might also be added to the staff to coach up the running backs. Two guys with great pedigree as players, but would basically be rookie coaches. With those two guys, you won't have a shortage of talking at practice, that's for sure.
You know, I've always wondered what a wide receiver is going to teach a running back, because this is not the first time a wide receiver has been a running backs coach. So it's just weird to see. Great to see Nick Lewis back in the league. I think the CFL is better with a guy like Nick Lewis in the league. And Ryan Phillips, I don't think it was too long ago on Twitter when those two guys were talking about getting a show on TSN together.
Yeah, well, they're gonna have a show in BC for sure. Like I said, practice will not be dull with those guys walking around on the field. Ryan Phillips was hired as a Western United States coach a couple of years ago, but that didn't last very long. I'm not sure what happened there. I think when Ed Hervey came in, he brought in his own guys, and Phillips was out of luck, but now he's back with the organization, I think we'll hear that, as we said, as you're listening to this podcast tomorrow, it might already be announced. Ed Hervey has some work to do, and it starts with finding himself a QB. Of course, anybody who's listened to the show, I'm on record as saying I don't think it will be Mike Riley, although I'm starting to think it's a stronger possibility with guys like Marshall Ferguson and Davis Sanchez saying they think it will happen. Regardless, that's not going to happen until the CBA is sorted out. The Lions have extended the contract to four-stringer Ricky Lloyd, who they really like. So Hervey must like what he sees in him. And, as you've said many times on this podcast, Ricky Lloyd's going to have to show something in training camp, in his second year with the Lions. But just the fact that they've extended his contract shows that they think he might have what it takes.
Yeah, good to see. I mean, you know, Wally was notorious for that second year guy better take a big step.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of those few things that, the guys look around and go, well, maybe a little bit of Wally-ism can stick around, and let's see what second year guys got.
As we mentioned, the Lions did have 34 free agents as of this morning, but later on in the day, they did announce a new deal for offensive tackle Joel Figueroa that will keep him a Lion through the 2020 season. That's a huge signing for the team, as Fig is one of the most solid tackles in the league, and whoever ends up as a Lions quarterback is going to be really happy to have him protecting him.
I thought that was a great signing. Great to see that happen. And I'm on the record. I'm thinking Riley's coming here. I think we're going to have Riley and Lule back in the show, back in the saddle, except for this time Riley will be driving.
So as for free agency, the Lions still have 33 on their list. 32 now, because Odell Willis signed earlier. I'm expecting we'll see some names on that list agree to new deals before the CBA is done, but the bigger names are going to likely wait and see how all that shakes down. Ed Hervey, along with Devon Claybrooks, will probably sit down and identify a core group that they want to try and bring back, and then identify areas where they would like to improve from outside the organization.
Yeah, I was surprised, a little bit surprised Odell Willis came back. Not that I didn't think he could come back. It's just
led the team in sacks with 11.
I thought, remember we talked about, do you take Willis or do you take Lemon? Which one were you gonna go after? Because we didn't think they'd both come back. And we both went the other way. So great to see Odell. Had a great year. And, you know, it'll be good to see him on the sidelines again.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested to see if they do bring Lemon back. A lot of Calgary Stampeders defensive linemen are free agents as well. So it'd be interesting to see if Claybrooks can possibly bring some of them to BC to play on his defense again. As we mentioned, talking with Coach Claybrooks, the CFL's football ops cap is now in full effect, and we've seen some big name casualties. John Murphy left Regina after declining a pay cut, and he's a well-respected football guy. We've seen Mike Benavidez dismissed from Edmonton. The Lions themselves won't have any issues with the cap this year, but the jury is out on this new cap mojo, and it's starting. It's going to be interesting to see how it affects things, especially with two new leagues starting down south.
Yeah, I mean, we all talk about the player drain on with these two new leagues, and we're going to have to start thinking about the coaching drain as well. But like Devon said, man, you want to coach, you get in where you can. So, you know, part of it is the reason why the Lions aren't worried about the cap, I guess, Brian, is because they're nowhere near the cap.
Yeah, they you know, they're not like the Saskatchewans and the Edmontons who have large staffs. You know, Saskatchewan had, you know, so many off-season training camps that they could have fielded four football teams if they wanted to. But, you know, I think it's good in a way that things are getting a cap to make it level. Hey, you know, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders pleaded to have a salary cap in the CFL for players because they couldn't compete. Now that they're flush with cash, they want to run their organization like an NFL team. So, you know, not everybody can do that. So I think this is the league's, you know, effort to kind of level the playing field on that, in that aspect of the game. And we're going to have to see how it works out and how it affects things going forward. The league has pulled the plug on this year's CFL week, which was scheduled to take place in Ottawa this year. This is due to the pending CBA negotiations, which will be getting all of the league's attention this offseason, and rightly so. It's tough, though, because the event was gaining popularity among fans, and it would have been a huge success in Ottawa, I'm sure, although I'm sure they'll get a chance to host it in 2020 when it's resurrected.
Yeah, let's hope things go smooth, Brian, for this new CBA, because the CFL, you know, with attendance the way it is and stuff, man, we don't need anything stupid going on with our season. So let's get in there and get her done and get back out on the field.
Well, Mojo, that's another year in the books for the podcast. It's been a pleasure once again, and thanks for riding along with me for another year. 2018 has been a tough one for you personally, so I certainly want to wish you a very happy holidays and a much better 2019. 7,000 downloads of the show this year. We ended up on trading cards. We got some love from the listeners with the Twitter award as well. Thanks to all of you for listening this year. Thank you to all our guests that joined us this year, and to the BC Lions for working with us to bring you guests from the team. I think things are looking up with the Lions, and I can't wait for free agency and training camp to see what Devon Claybrooks and Ed Hervey do with this team.
Yeah, you know, Brian, man, what a year it's been for me. And before we go, folks, I just want to say thank you so much for all the support that you guys have given me on this year. And I just want to say, because a lot of the comments don't make it onto the show, but when we've had other CFL podcasters on the show, you guys have said some of the nicest things to me that anyone has ever said to me in my life. You guys are all so special out there. And man, I'm just, I really felt the love this year, Brian. Cancer sucks. Fuck cancer. But the silver lining is you find out who cares about you, and you find out really fast what a community we have. I love you guys. Thanks for doing the show with me, Brian. Thanks for letting me be part of it. And it's going to be a great 2019.
Cheers to that. For sure. Hey, this season, the podcast has been brought to you by AngusReid64.com. We want to thank him for coming on board with us. If you have something you want to get out to the CFL community and you would be interested in joining the show in 2019 as a sponsor, we'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with me at brian@bclionsden.ca. If you follow me on Twitter at bclionsden, you can send me a DM. We're open to all sorts of arrangements. So drop me a line and let me know what you have in mind, and we can help spread your message to, the 7,000 people that downloaded our show, this year. So, we're looking for new sponsors, to help out, with some promotional items and things like that. If you think you can help out, we'd love to hear from you. Make sure you to check out all the great shows in the Canadian Football Podcast Network, because folks, they keep getting better and better. We're proud to be a part of it. Check out cfpodnetwork.ca and at cfpodnetwork on Twitter to stay up to date. Please tell your friends to check us out and make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Check us out online at bclionsden.ca, on Facebook at facebook.com/bclionsden.ca, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWDCAST. And of course, follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at Mojo Kemp. We'll talk to you again sometime in the new year as news starts to happen. But until then, stay safe and have a happy holidays and a happy and prosperous new year. Thanks again to the BC Lions and Devon Claybrooks for joining us. On behalf of Mojo Camp and myself, take care of yourselves. And as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.